to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH, 105.5 FM, and WGCH.com, anywhere. Well, I have my dear friend, Benny Wallace. He is an amazing musician. He plays the tenor sax. He also is a creative director. He runs backcountry jazz with his very able wife, Jeanette, which is an amazing gift to our state, the city of Bridgeport, in helping children be enhanced by the musical gift that he offers along with his staff. And Benny, you have done so many things. You've lived out in California and scored movies and just amazing career. How did you get started in music?
Oh, let's see. My mother gave me a record of Lester Young and Count Basie, and I liked it, but I didn't have to know anything about, have any aspirations toward playing the saxophone. And that was, I was about 11. And then a year or two later, we got a new music teacher, and who was a jazz musician, and he turned me on to Sonny Rollins and John Coltrane and all the best jazz, and so I was hooked.
Ah.
It's been a great life.
So it's that you heard something that resonated with you in your soul, and you just made it become your life.
Well, and that, you know, that's exactly it. I heard something that resonated in my soul, and you know, that's something it's even hard to describe. To describe in the left brain, you know, there was just something about this music that that really went to my core. Mm. And I remember this one particular solo that Sonny Rollins played the first time I heard his music, and I was hearing these rhythms and notes between the beats, between the notes, and I just thought that was fascinating, and I still do.
Mm. Do you have a favorite jazz musician or a cluster of favorites?
A cluster, a large cluster. You know, on virtually every instrument. And that's the other thing about this music is once you start, the resources are seemingly infinite. I know when I was a kid, a couple of years before I discovered music, I discovered photography, and I was like obsessed with it. I got a dark room and a camera, and I would go out and make pictures and I was making money. And
wow.
Then all of a sudden it wasn't fun anymore. And now, you know, I've been doing this music for many, many decades, and it's more exciting every day.
What are some of the changes you have seen from when you first started out as a musician, just doing gigs here and there, to what you see going on with music in the 21st century?
Wow.
Is that too long a question?
it's a loaded question. And, you know, when I discovered this music was probably when it was at its apex. You know, the Stan Getz and Sonny Rollins and John Coltrane and Coleman Hawkins were very active. Duke Ellington and Count Basie. You know, it seemed like Miles Davis and Dizzy Gillespie, it seemed like on every instrument there was at least two and usually several great artists just at the peak of their creativity. And it was just so welcoming an art form. It was really seductive, you know. And now, you know, what's out there in the world to me is just a commodity. And, and you know, and I find it kind of disheartening what I see going on. And although at the same time there are just all of these amazing young musicians coming up and that I'm having an opportunity to either hear or play with. And so the music is still growing, but the business has become commodified. Mm. And I think it's very dangerous, just like some of the stuff that's going on in our government. It, you know, it's And then I think COVID makes it even more dangerous because we're going to lose, well, we've already lost so many jazz clubs in the city.
And
so many working musicians having to move out of the city. And then what's going to be left is the General Motors of jazz, which is not a good thing. There's your controversial answer.
Yeah, I know. There are several different jazz stations that I like to listen to. And one I call the elevator music jazz, where it's just background because maybe I'm having a conversation with someone and I really don't need to listen to the music. And then there's, I don't want to do anything but just hear the music to be sort of enveloped in the sound and to try and hear the, you know, since I've been going to a lot of your concerts, it's been like a master's class in music, and I hear so much more than I did however many years ago when I first met you.
That makes me feel good. That's the purpose of it.
Yeah.
And you know, the other thing is when I started playing this music, which was 1959, I didn't know anything about the business or the people behind the business.
Mm.
But all of the record companies, with the exception of Columbia Records, were small record companies. Blue Note was like two or three guys. And there were all of these independent producers or small record company producers, more accurate, that were producing incredible jazz and the stuff that now, you know, is endured to this day and will keep going. And when I really got into the business and signed with an American label, by that time all those guys were gone, and it was people that were thinking only in terms of the bottom line. And they didn't really understand or love the art form that much. And fortunately, I was able to meet some of those old-timers. In fact, the guy that founded Blue Note heard me and got my phone number and called me up, and we talked for about an hour, and he took a real interest in my music, and that makes me feel good to this day. But the business is kind of dark, something good will come of it in the end, but it's really in a state of change right now.
I'm sure you've seen the two films, one about Miles Davis and the other about Chet Baker, their life, a section of their lives. But that presents a very dark world of music.
I haven't seen the one about Miles, and I think I saw 5 minutes of it, and it was so disgusting I stopped. And there's a couple of movies about Chet. One was a documentary, which was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew Chet. I played with him a bit.
Really?
Yeah, that was better. But the one about Miles was really an insult to Miles and to the art form.
Mm-hmm. It made him almost a caricature in that film.
Yeah. There's also one about Chet, Lee Morgan, another wonderful trumpet player that's quite good.
Well, I'm going to have to check those out. I always find if you listen to someone's music, you hear their, I hear their voice. And that's one of the little things
I think the one
I
about
play.
Morgan is just called Morgan, or I called him Morgan, or something like that. But it's a couple of years old, but it's quite good.
Oh, definitely. And when I'm doing this sort of test with myself of hearing the voice, when I know the backstory of their lives, the voice becomes even more poignant.
Oh, yeah. I've been reading about Billie Holiday lately, and I've read many books about Billie over the years, but I'm going through that same thing. Like I'm going through her life in this book and going back and listening to the records again.
Yes.
Incredible.
Yes. So how did you get involved with starting backcountry jazz?
Well, it was a complete accident. We were producing one isolated jazz concert, and my partner, Craig what's Craig's last name? I can't think of his last name right now. He owned still owns the wine store in Glenville, and we were looking for a place to play a concert, and we wound up at Seven Bridges Gallery.
Sure. Yeah.
And the fellow that owns the property, after the concert, approached me and said, start a nonprofit to do these concerts, and I'll contribute to it. And at the same time, Joan Warburg asked me to play a benefit concert for one of her charities, Family Reentry. And so those two phone calls started Backcountry Jazz.
Isn't that fantastic?
And that was 13 years ago.
The eventual outreach to Bridgeport and the children of Bridgeport for musical education, how did that come about?
Well, we played, again, an isolated concert in Bridgeport with our nine-piece band, and it seemed like everybody in the music and music education community in Bridgeport showed up. And
wow.
they cornered me after it was over and asked if we would participate in working with kids on a very limited basis. And we did that for a year or two, and then they lost their funding for their summer program, and we took it over and jumped off the deep end.
How many young people are you serving now in Bridgeport with musical education?
Well, it depends on what you call serving. Like we have maybe 70 kids in our educational program, but we reach a couple of thousand kids every year performing it for schools or citywide school concerts.
So it's conceivable a child in the audience could hear you playing the sax and fall in love with the instrument and decide to become a musician.
Oh, they have.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful.
We're graduating some wonderful students with a lot of promise, and we've got some still with us that are just, very, very good young musicians.
Neat. Well, I hear my music, which means I have to take a commercial break, and then we'll be right back with Benny Wallace, who is the head of Backcountry Jazz, and we're also have some recordings of Benny that we're going to be listening to. You're listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH, 105.5 FM, and also WGCH.com, anywhere. Welcome back to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH. WGCH.com, anywhere, and 105.5 FM. Today, we have Benny Wallace with us. In the previous segment, we talked with Benny about how he became a musician and then his great contribution to the children of Bridgeport with musical education, and also what a wonderful gift there is to Greenwich with Backcountry Jazz. So, Benny, would you introduce a piece of music for us that we're going to listen to, that you are the on the recording?
Sure. This is a composition of mine called Border Town, and it's the title song of a Blue Note record. But the recording that we're going to play is a live recording in Tokyo with all Japanese musicians, and they really played it beautifully. And if anybody likes it, go on YouTube and find the whole thing, because I'm sure we'll just hear a bit of it.
Wow. All right. So that's you, right, Benny?
Yep. Thank you.
love listening to it, but it makes me want to get up and dance.
Yeah.
It has a real, it just gets to you and makes you feel like moving.
Yeah, that was fun. My friend Yosuke Yamashita was the piano player, and he put together that group, and I just flew over to Tokyo, and I don't even remember a rehearsal, but I'm sure there must have been one. And I think it was for television.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fun. Jeanette discovered it a couple of years ago on YouTube, and it was a treat for me to hear it.
That is. That has to be an interesting thing to hear a performance and be just sort of mentally zoomed back.
Well, it's frightening to see what you looked like 35 years ago.
A totally different person.
I don't want to hijack the itinerary here, but you know, we are playing concerts here in Greenwich right now.
Oh, tell us about that.
Well, when COVID hit, everything stopped in the jazz business, and I was listening to Dr. Zeke Emanuel one day on the radio, and he said, as long as you're outside and not too close to people, you're really safe. And we have this beautiful property here, and we have friends with beautiful properties, and so every week, almost this summer, we've been playing a free concert for our neighbors and for, you know, everybody in the area. And we keep the crowd size down for social distancing, and everything is outdoors. And it's really been fun. And it's been great for me because I've been performing every week and developing some music. And so, you know, I'm one of the few people who can't complain about what's going on right now.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. In fact, we're doing one this Saturday. And we got so many people wanting to come, we're trying to figure out a way to put on a second show. So,
wow.
It seems to be working.
Well, I guess so. So people need to contact Backcountry Jazz?
Go on backcountryjazz.org, and there should be a phone number and an email address there. And, you know, the original set for Saturday is sold out with a pretty good-sized waiting list. But we're thinking about doing another set a little bit earlier in the afternoon. And so if we do that, there will be plenty of room for people.
Isn't that something? Now, who are the musicians that you have?
They're incredible.
Okay.
But see,
that's
the other thing. Like, musicians who would normally be all over the planet right now are at home. And so I've got a wonderful organ player, Pat Bianchi, who is in Pat Martino's trio. And I've got Paul Bolenbeck, a great guitar player who has got a history of playing with Pat. And then this week, the drummer is Nasheed Waits, who's one of the leading drummers in the business right now. He's on, a lot of really prominent recordings. And until touring stopped, he was touring all the time. And so it'll be my first chance to play with Nasheed. And so this is going to be fun.
I would think so. And do you listen to their recordings and then decide to make the outreach to invite them to do a gig with you? How does that work?
Yeah, you know, first I ask, you know, I talk to the other musicians, but for example, Nasheed was recommended to me for another project, which we haven't done yet because of COVID, so I went and looked his music up and really liked it. And then when this came up, we were talking about some different possibilities. So I gave him a call. And so in addition to being a great drummer, he's also a very nice man. And so I'm looking forward to meeting him and playing with him.
That will be great. How much rehearsal do you have to have before you do? Or is it...
Well, in this situation, we have none. we do a sound check about an hour before, and you know, if I've got a new tune, we go over it. Mm-hmm. But the other musicians have been playing with me for several weeks, and so we'll just surprise Nasheed with some of this music. But I've got a couple that we haven't played that we're working on, and so I talk with the organ player and the guitar player about it, and so everybody's ready to go when we get there. But there's neither the time nor the budget to have rehearsals because, you know, we're not charging anybody to come to the concert.
Right.
So it's just kind of backcountry jazz's gift to the community.
But it's
an expensive one.
You do want, if people are so inclined, to make a donation.
Yes, and also, you know, people have been making donations throughout the summer, and I think that, you know, it's a good way for people to get acquainted with what we do and also see what we're doing now, which is different from what we've done in the past. And I think it's a pretty good likelihood that this summer series will continue next summer.
Great. And you've had it at some pretty beautiful locations.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. The last one was down by the water at Mead Point. And we did one at a horse farm over on Round Hill. And we've done several on our property.
Which is a gorgeous piece of property.
Coming up.
Yeah.
We're going to play in Bedford on Thursday, the 24th of September, at a beautiful property there. And so that's our summer tour.
That's fantastic. So if people want to find out more, they go to backcountryjazz.org.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they want to make a reservation, there'll be a place to be in touch?
Well, there should be a phone number there.
Okay.
But the phone number is 203-561-3111.
Okay, that's easy to remember. 3111.
Yeah, 561-3111.
Great. Well, I know you are doing so many different things. It seems like there are always all these adventures you're creating, both for the musicians that you know, the musicians you're meeting, and you have a lot of great talent. I know one year I heard Jasmina Horn on a backcountry jazz concert, and now I turn on the radio and I hear her all the time.
Oh, yeah, we did a lot with Jasmina over a couple of years. I think we did two concerts here in Greenwich and some things in Bridgeport for kids with the citywide youth concerts. She's wonderful, and just it was a real treat to play with Jasmina.
So it's all just talent abounding, great music, and in the fall, will you be doing anything inside or into the winter, or is it all still dependent on where we are with COVID?
Well, like everybody else, we're waiting to see what the winter holds for us. And we're planning to keep doing these outdoor concerts until it gets cold, which could go into October.
Right.
And then we're going to have the education program start back up. We have one of our teachers has had COVID and seems to be immune, and so he's going to be working on site with our kids, and we're going to be doing periodic online special workshops with artists.
That's outstanding.
And who knows what we're going to do or not be able to do until it gets warm again. Right now, that's anybody's guess.
It certainly is. That's for sure.
I follow it all the time on the news, and I hope we can. That if they come up with a quick test, we can just test everybody before we do a performance.
Right.
But that's off in the future, and nobody knows how far in the future.
Right. Well, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed because I know I really enjoy. I think personally, I really love going to St. Bede's and listening in that space. And Jeanette has the fine ability to turn it into a jazz club and make it just be a wonderful experience. So I'm hoping for that in the future, and that everyone is safe and gets back to great music of backcountry jazz.
Yeah, we all hope so and look forward to it.
Right. Well, this has been a lovely opportunity to talk to you, Benny, and I appreciate your coming on air and sharing all your knowledge and your wonderful music. I look forward to the next time that we talk, and I'll be sending friends to your website to check out the concert next time that there's some available space, since you are sold out.
Yeah, but I think there's a good possibility we'll do a second show on Saturday. We're just checking the logistics now.
Wonderful. All right. You've been listening to Darby and Friends, 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com, anywhere, and 105.5 FM.